Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is, February 25. Is it 25?
Yeah, it's 25.
Okay. Oh, it's a leap year, right? This year is a leap year.
Yeah.
Nigga, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it is. I mean, it's because
that means you have 29 days, right?
Yeah, 29. Exactly.
A friend of ours, their kid is a leap year kid.
Really?
They're having a birthday, you know, so they send you the invite. This is a second birthday or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, how's everybody doing?
I'm
great.
Everybody's good. Everybody's healthy and happy.
I mean, I ain't really all the way healthy.
Right.
100%.
Well, you know, are any of us?
Yeah, but I mean,
put on some weight. Some late winter weight. I got to get that shit off because spring is around the corner.
Yeah, I've been pretty good with my gym shit. I've been going. I went when I was in Miami last week working, and I went twice down there. I didn't go in Kentucky. I didn't really have the time. I went yesterday. I've been pretty good. I've been doing all right with it.
I've been slacking like a mug.
Yeah, I've been doing all right with it. Trying to eat half ass decent. You know, you slack sometimes, but you try to.
Speaking of eating stuff, so tomorrow is Ash Wednesday, which is the beginning of the Lenten season, which is leading into Easter. Do either of you observe Lent?
No.
Or do you give up stuff for Lent? Have you ever?
Nah, I never did that.
Sean's face was so declarative. No.
I always felt, I mean, it's, I know this is absolutely wrong, and now it's probably going to, like, jump down my throat.
Probably.
Yeah, you know. But I always felt like Lent, it just felt more Catholic.
So it is primarily Catholic.
Yeah, like the Catholics take it dead serious. Like they real serious about it.
It's primarily Catholic, but some Protestant denominations, like I didn't grow up observing Lent. I knew what it was, but I grew up knowing it mostly as a Catholic practice, but I grew up in the Methodist church. But a lot of Baptist churches do also observe Lent. And when you do it properly, I think the trick is that a lot of people use it as an excuse to, like, kick off a diet.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like, I need to give up, you know, fried food. But when it's really
chocolate or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what it's really supposed to be is you making a sacrifice that's going to be a challenge for you. But instead of, like, if you are giving, like, say you give up, I don't know, social media. You're supposed to replace it with meditation and study. You're not supposed to just give it up.
And then keep living the regular shit.
Yeah, like the idea is to get your sustenance. Whatever thing you're giving up, you're supposed to replace it with like focus and meditation and
clarity.
And prayer and study and clarity. And you're supposed to fast with like intention, you know, that type of thing. And I think that's where some of us get it jacked up.
And also felt like Ash Wednesday was a little more Catholic too.
It is.
I
don't go get ashes.
And you don't get that on the forehead?
No, because that is a Catholic thing. Being in
New York. Yeah, absolutely. In New York, you see it that day, it's like black ash on everybody's forehead.
So that is a Catholic thing. I only observe Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, in the sense that it is the beginning of the Lenten season. That's it.
Okay. And then, but, you know, black folks, you know, we love some Easter now. That's us.
Love Easter. Love Palm Sunday.
Oh, yeah. The palm. You got to bring your palm.
You got to bring your palm.
And get it tied up. And stick your palm in. To stick your palm in the Bible.
Or you got to put it in your car dash.
Oh, yeah. You put it in the car, too.
Mama used to hang. She used to hang a palm cross on a little door thing and we came in the house.
Yeah, for blessing you. Blessing you. Come in there. Exactly. Right. Exactly. So I want to give a big shout out. She'll never hear this ever, but I want to give a big shout out to my aunt Kat, who I've mentioned on the show before. But she turned 90. She turns 90. Actually, her birthday is actually today, the 25th. But we had a big celebration for her Saturday past in Kentucky. So after Miami, I flew up to Kentucky and spent the weekend up there. And it's not surprising, but it was really dope. You know, to be around the family and, you know, celebrate her and learn more stuff about the family and, stuff you don't know. It's just, it's always a good feeling to be able, you know, to be able to do that. Because, you know, as we all get older, we, you know, we don't go down south like we used to. We don't see the family like we used to.
Yeah.
You know, you get your life going and you're like, you always think about, I should go, but you don't go. And so, like, I went last summer and I talked about that on the show, too. And that was the first time I had been in years. So this is, you know, the trip for me to actually have been down there twice in a calendar, you know, in 12 months.
Yeah, because you were down there for the family reunion for the time.
Yeah, that was August, and then right back for this for her 90th. So, again, it's really, you know, it was a trip. I was telling my cousin, we were sitting next to each other, and I looked around and I said, "Yo, it was so her pastor and his wife was there, and the associate pastor and his wife was there. So besides those four people, I was like, "Yo, we're related to everybody in this room."
I love that.
That was, I was like, yo, everybody in this room is related. It comes from the same, you know, kind of tree.
Yeah.
Except for those four folks. So that was, you know, it was a good, It was a good feeling. You know, 90 obviously is a milestone, and, you know, she's, you know, on the back nine, as they say. So I didn't want to miss it. So, you know, I want to give a shout. My cousins, one of my young cousins told me she listens to the show. And I was like, you got me thinking about everything I say. And she's like, nah, I don't worry. I mean, she's young to me. She's like 30. You know what I mean?
Oh,
she's,
okay.
Yeah, she's grown, you know. So she was like, nah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'm like, I'll be self-conscious. So, Melinda, I'm trying to be better.
Yo, it always puts just like the tiniest seed of panic in my spirit when somebody from down south tells me they listen to the show. I'd be like, you do?
Yeah,
do what?
You really? Are you serious? Yeah, so. Yeah, so that's the one I wanted to say that. You know, yeah. Y'all got any shout outs?
I don't.
Okay.
I feel like I did. And I want to shout out Mbakwe. I want to shout out Christiana.
Oh, yes.
Obi is here with a head full of hair. Bless her heart. Baby was 8 pounds and some change.
Woo!
Yeah, that's, I was a like, lot. Where did that come from? But she said,
yeah, big old baby.
Yeah, especially because Mbakwe's, you know, small. Just,
yeah, she said, but she said her mother's, her maternal grandmother apparently was known for having some biggins, but they were expecting the baby to be, I think she said they were expecting the baby to be like 6-7 pounds, so that was like a surprise.
Nice.
So, you know, shout out to her. She kept her pregnancy. She's so funny. She didn't she didn't have a baby shower. She didn't put, like, now she's posting all her pregnancy pictures of the babies here.
Yep.
But we love you, Mbakwe. Congratulations to you and Lewis.
Absolutely.
And her parents are here. So, you know, she is the oldest daughter of the oldest daughter. So it's like a big old
thing.
Yeah. So I'm really happy for her. So, you know, we have a lot of the friends of the Pop Life family have had babies this past year. We had country cousins, sons.
Yeah, her child just turned one, right?
His first birthday is on, his birthday party is on Saturday.
Yeah.
Jovi and George, Jovi and Zane and George welcomed their daughter, Georgie. Whitney welcomed her son, Gavin,
who's 2 months old.
I'm going to go see them, check them this week. And then we have Mbakwe, so we just want, so we have a lot of little friends of the show, babies running around.
Yeah.
Sunday sermon going to be lit with the kids.
Yeah, Sunday sermon going to be like a daycare. Be daddy daycare up in that joint. Hold the baby. I got to go. You know, it's going to be that. But it's going to be good, though. It's going
to
be good.
I also just want to give a shout out. We talked about the documentary here, but I just want to give a shout out again to Who Killed Malcolm X. We did.
Oh, yeah, because you did this. You had the thing, right?
Yeah, we did a screening and a panel discussion at the Shabazz Center this past Friday, which was the 55th anniversary of Malcolm's assassination. And I'm such a fan of Dr. Gates. I was really excited to meet him.
Oh, he was there?
Yeah, he was there. He moderated.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Oh, Skip. Tell Skip I said, what's up?
Hey, Skip. Skip was in town and he ain't called me.
He was there, irritated with us because we were starting late. And I was like, Skip, I know you. I was like, Dr. Gates, I know you do black people shit all the.
Yeah.
Nigga, you from West Virginia.
You gonna stop. You gonna stop the bullshit.
You know what it is.
Exactly. And your name's
5:30 means 6:15.
Exactly.
Black and brand new.
Exactly.
And also brother Abdur Rahman Muhammad, who is the center of the doc, was there along with the other producers and directors. So it was just a really, really great event, a packed house. Interesting to, like, you know, hear them talk about it directly.
Yeah.
Talk about you know, the legislation that's now coming out of it. So it was a good room and it was a good night. And I am very happy at the renewed interest around Malcolm. Because, you know, our generation, Gen X, we grew up, I don't know where it came from, because it happened before Spike did the movie, but I just remember there all of a sudden being this huge, I guess maybe from, like, the Five Percenters in hip-hop or something. But
yeah, that's kind of what, that's kind of,
all of a sudden, everybody was reading the autobiography of Malcolm X. Everybody was writing, and this was, again, before Spike did the movie.
Yeah.
This was all happening.
Yeah, it was all public, it was Public Enemy, it was X-Clan, it was, like you said, Poor Righteous Teachers, and, you know, some of the other kind of Five Percenter or, you know, kind of militant.
Yeah,
groups,
the,
you know what I'm saying?
The presence of Islam and hip hop was really massive in the early 90s. So, you know, and we was, and we were all also all on a, it was like a combination of Garveyism and Malcolm X's specific type of Islam at the same time, because we were also all on our back to Africa shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Medallions and everything else. So to see, for there to now be an opportunity for a new generation to get invested and learn more about him from also like a different, a broader perspective,
I think is
excellent. So I love the feedback that the doc is receiving. It's just really well done.
That's good. I also want to mention the murder, this is what it was, of Pop Smoke, a 20-year-old rapper from Brooklyn who was murdered in Los Angeles I hate to say this, but kind of more of an alleged home invasion, because it was called a home invasion, like a robbery, but he was the only one shot, and there was a house full of people. So, a lot of things are still haven't unfolded, but from the
early, nothing was stolen.
And nothing was stolen. Exactly. Nothing was taken. So it is obviously he was targeted for some reason that I don't know if it will ever come out or not. And Sean said nothing was stolen, and they shot him and a house full of people and left. There's been nothing publicly, no more public kind of leads on the case. I don't know, you know, the LA cops seemed to have a lot of interest in the case when it first started. A lot of weird things that went on. They said that when he got shot, the LAPD got a call from somebody here in New York as opposed to somebody in the house in LA. It was just a lot of weird stuff going on with this situation. You know, so he was on his way, you know, who knows how big he wouldn't have would have been, but he had a nice early few steps to kind of, you know, going into rap.
Yeah, people were really looking for a lot from him.
Yeah, he's a good looking kid, very fashionable. He had a different kind of rap style than most New York guys. His voice was kind of unique and different. So he was trying to do some things. So, I was talking to someone about this last week, I guess when I was down in Florida, it was like people kind of forget, like, oh, he's a 20-year-old kid. Like, he's got a family. He's got a mother and a father and brothers and sisters. And, like, he's 20. He probably got, you know, kids. He was in high school 2 years ago. He's a child, you know. So it's like yeah, he's Pop Smoke the rapper, but we lost a 20-year-old child. Like, he wasn't even old enough to drink yet. You know, so it's a terrible situation, you know, blessings to his family because,
yeah.
That's got to be awful.
On the other side, in terms of deaths, kind of more, for lack of a better word, time.
Yeah, let's knock the death segment out right now.
So we lost Janae Dubois, better known as Belonging, better known as the voice of the Jeffersons theme song.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, we lost Katherine Johnson, one of the women who is the centerpiece of Hidden Figures, who worked for NASA at 101 years old, which is, I mean, frankly, that's a blessing. And then we lost fashion and lifestyle guru Barbara Smith, who we talked about here on the show, who had been suffering from dementia for quite some time. Who succumbed, you know, what was it, 2 days ago, 3 days ago?
Yeah, about two, three days ago. I think it was 2 days ago. How old was B. Smith?
I want to say she was in her 70s.
She was in her early 70s.
Like 70, 71,
71, 72. Yeah. And even Janae was like, 74. She had just been on the Jeffersons live, the Norman Lear live thing.
Yeah, they said that as far as
gotten her sleep, but they didn't say what the cause of death was.
Yeah, they said she had, but previous to that, there had been no signs of illness or anything. She said she just went to sleep and just didn't wake up, which tells me obviously, I ain't no doctor. But probably a heart attack, you know, something that kills you like that. It's interesting. I like, you know, you kind of forget that the good times was on like 40 years ago.
Yeah, 40 years ago. 40 plus.
Yeah, 40 plus, almost 45 years.
No, why? Because when we were growing up, it's been in syndication
forever.
That's the thing. All Norman Lear shows have been in such heavy syndication for so long. It's, I think I might have talked about this on here before. It's hard, it's easy to forget, A, how old they are, and B, how impactful they were. Good Times was the first two-parent black family household that we saw on television.
Yes, yes.
I mean, granted, they were in the ghetto, but...
Yeah, but it was two... Exactly.
It was the first black... It was the first TV show focused on a black family unit where they weren't the their secondary or tertiary characters.
Exactly. And yeah, like, it's interesting because, like you said, the syndication of Good Times and the Jeffersons definitely distorts how long, you know, when those shows were actually on. But and I don't see as weird because the show that spawned all of those, All in the Family, I don't see in syndication that much.
Yeah, I don't see All in the Family on syndication that much.
Or Maude.
It's like it was when I was younger.
But it seems like it's faded away. Maybe because Good Times Jeffersons are on the black channels, like on a BT and stuff like that. So
but they're also on TV Land. I think maybe because
All in the Family. Yeah, they were TV Land. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and I don't think All in the Family was ever on TV Land. That's a good point. Even One Day at a Time used to be in heavy syndication, which is also a Norman Lear.
Yeah.
So that's a good point about All in the Family. I'm not sure. And yeah, it's probably low-key the smartest out of all of them.
Yeah.
Which might be why it might be too poignant.
I don't think Archie plays in the same way right now.
Great.
Yeah, he just doesn't. He doesn't play the same, and you won't, and I don't think in this age of, you know, wokeism that people understand satire and sort of getting the joke. They don't really understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that people have shied away from that. You know, there's a lot of stereotypes in that particular show that is on purpose, right? Like We you know, obviously on the outside, Edith is, you know, basically in this sort of, you know, in this timid role, right? But we know, you know, when you actually watch the show, you know that Edith is not dumb. She is not,
smart. Yeah.
She's actually quite smart. She understands that she's playing a bit of a role here.
Right.
And that just, I don't think it flies in the way when you look at the Jeffersons and kind of how it plays, you know, George being, you know, a bit of an asshole, but not necessarily being like harsh.
Right.
In the same way Archie was, and Wheezy kind of having this very stand up, you know, sort of, you know, backbone.
Yeah.
Right. So I just think they play different.
You're absolutely right. Cause now that you mentioned that, I remember that when they first did the, Norman Lear Live with All in the Family and the Jeffersons, I saw a lot of younger people like, I never watched All in the Family because it's about this racist white man. And I was like, no, the point is that Archie's like out of date. He's you know what I mean? Like
he's played out.
How life is passing Archie by. Like, he's used as like every other character in the show is used in juxtaposition against Archie to prove how out of touch he is. And you're right, people totally miss that. And even with the Jeffersons, the stuff that tends to be in syndication is often the older seasons, which are a little more lighthearted, instead of the early seasons, which really deal with like real ass shit, you know?
Yeah. So the last thing I want to mention, as far as, you know, people passing away, is they did the memorial service for Kobe Bryant yesterday at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. It was, you know, really well done. Beyonce sung, Alicia Keys played, she didn't sing, she played, I guess a Mozart, must have been one of their favorite,
he learned how to play it for,
he played it for Vanessa, so she played that. Who spoke? Shaq, Jordan, Rob Pelinka, who was his, agent a long time, and, you know, one of his, maybe his best friend. I feel like I'm forgetting somebody who spoke. Jimmy Kimmel, who hosted it.
What was it? So I DVR'd it because I just knew I couldn't do it in real time. What was the connection with Kimmel and Kobe?
I think that they were just cool based on some LA shit, like just kind of being in LA and being around. And Kobe has been on his show, you know, a few times, you know, especially after basketball. Like, I think they just had a good kind of, you know, working relationship. And then you also come find out apparently Vanessa and Beyonce are really close.
Yeah, I think that Beyonce and Jay and Kobe and Vanessa were
kind of really close, which is why Beyonce sung. It, you know, wasn't like they were trying to make a show. It was like, no, that's my friend. You know, Vanessa's speech was obviously, you know, really emotional and hard to watch. It's the first time she's kind of spoken publicly. Probably the only time maybe for a long time anyway, to speak publicly about Kobe and how she, you know, was kind of dealing with the situation. Everybody in the Staples Center was crying because it was tough. She's not a public person. She's not a speaker. You know, she's not like an entertainer. So this is like a real person speaking in front of, you know, 50,000 people inside besides the television. So it was really well done, for lack of a better term. And then, you know, kind of surprisingly to everyone, I believe, was Jordan's speech, which was crazy emotional. Like, Jordan started crying. Literally, he got to the podium and tears just started coming. Like, he wasn't even holding it back. Like, but he was poignant. He was funny because he mentioned the meme.
Which was surprising to me. That surprised me because I don't think of Jordan as being self-deprecating in humor.
Well, he's
and
not.
He made the meme joke. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay.
He's not self-deprecating. That was why it was even more shocking that he kind of mentioned it and mentioned it in a funny way. And of course, the whole Staples Center like laughed and they kind of needed to laugh because it was a very, you know, obviously heavy moment. But Jordan's speech was great. Like, it also showed that we, you know, again, with this Kobe thing, and this is for people in general. It's even like, I mean, I kind of even, you know, harking it back to a little bit of, you know, like I told you, being at my aunt's cat thing over the weekend. It's like, you know, like you still learn stuff about people that you just kind of think you know, but you don't, you know? And like, people didn't think that Jordan and Kobe had any real type of relationship. But then Jordan's like, nah, like that was like my little brother. Like, we talk all the time. Like, that was like, he's like, the dude was a pain in the ass. Jordan said he resisted it at first. Like, I'm not fucking with this dude. Like, come on, get out of here. Because Kobe hitting him at 2 a.m. like, yo, when you in the low post, like, dude, when you lean with the left shoulder, Jordan's like, man, get the fuck. But he said,
and
Jordan,
that sounds like such a Kobe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Jordan said he just kind of wore him down. And he said that kind of, not animosity, but just kind of that standoffishness that Jordan has. He said he wore me down, and like he became like my little brother, and we talked about everything, like obviously basketball, about life, about money, about what to do next. And he said like, and they were like really, really close. And like I said, Jordan's like snot crying, like he's like crying. Yeah. So like that was a great speech. And then Shaq came up and gave a speech. He didn't cry, but he also gave a funny story about Kobe. So. Which again was, you know, everybody kind of needed because, you know, it was a
You need in these moments you need some levity, right?
Yeah.
You need some levity. You need some moments that are gonna make you laugh and just like appreciate, like we were talking about the other week on a different level, appreciate the full breadth and depth of a person, rather than them just being one dimensional. So I did see a clip from Shaq when he said that people wanted him to talk to Kobe about hogging the ball.
Yeah.
And Shaq was like, Kobe, there's no I in team. And Kobe was like, there's an in me and that motherfucker. You know,
exactly.
You know, you appreciate that. So, I'm going to watch it probably tonight. I just knew I couldn't do it in real time. And everybody on my timeline was
flooded. Yeah.
Talking about how sad it was. And I was like, I couldn't start. You know, it was like at 12 o'clock. I was like, I can't. I gotta wait.
And a huge chunk of the NBA players were there. Obviously past and present. You know, a lot of Steph Curry, James Harden, Dwayne Wade, you know, Shaq, Paul Gasol. They were all there. There's like a, I don't know if controversy is the right term, but like, it's because LeBron wasn't shown. Now, I saw online that LeBron, there's two stories I've seen floating. One is that LeBron, and I don't know if you can do this, but I saw this, LeBron basically kind of told the networks, like, I don't want to be on camera. Because somebody took a picture And like, it looks like LeBron was there. Like, he had a hoodie on, though. Like, he didn't want to be seen. And then other people saying, like, he was in the building, but he didn't come out the back. You say it was too emotional for him.
I heard that there was direction for certain people not to be, I think the other kids weren't shown on camera either, right?
Yeah, I only saw the oldest. When Jordan came down, he hugged Vanessa, and then he hugged the oldest. Yeah, but there was, it was showing Vanessa a lot, but they weren't showing the children.
I heard that there was direction given not to show certain people on camera.
I could believe that.
So as to not distract from, to not be like, what's the word? I guess grief porn, but also to not like distract from what this was about. It's about coping,
So maybe that Jordan, LeBron put himself under that because he wasn't seen, but he was apparently. Because
otherwise, they probably would have thrown a camera on him like 82,000 times.
It would have been 100 million times, exactly. So, that was a tough service to watch. So again, peace and love to Vanessa.
I do want to say I didn't see this, but I saw people talking about this, that people felt a way that the parents didn't speak and they're trying to blame Vanessa for it. First of all, that was the public service. We don't know what happened at the private.
True.
Secondly, Kobe wasn't, I don't want to say Kobe wasn't fucking with his parents, but we all know that Kobe and his family weren't exactly.
They went through some ups and downs.
They went through some shit. So
it showed his dad a couple of times. I didn't watch the whole service, but the part I saw, it showed his dad a couple of times. They didn't show his mom from what I saw, or his sisters. But again, that's just from what I saw. But I saw his dad a couple of times. But again, it's almost like if you don't know, you probably wouldn't even know that was his father, because you would have just seen an older man kind of grieving. It's like they weren't putting names across the screen when they were showing
people. Right.
So I just wanted to mention that. So let's jump into it. Real Housewives of let's deal with this. Is sports. Let's get it out the way. The Wilder Fury fight. Did you watch it, bro?
Yeah, I watched it.
Did you watch it live?
No, I heard that shit was over pretty immediately.
No. Seven rounds?
Or was it just it was a really bad knockout?
It was over for him immediately because he just, Fury hit him with a right hand that busted his eardrum.
I saw a picture of his face, mid-hit. That shit was not...
Yeah, it busted his eardrum. So, from that point on, Wilder's equilibrium was just all his legs, just didn't have his legs on them. And, now you start making all these excuses about the costume he wore, which was bonkers, into the ring and all this. And it's like, yo, man, you got beat. The dude Fury probably came in weighing almost close to 300. He weighed in at 273. And I'm sure, he's put on weight since then. So he was bigger and he just, Fury's actually a way better boxer, technically, a way better boxer than Wilder. Wilder's a puncher. Like, if he hits you, it's a wrap. But he still doesn't have, boxing skills. And so Fury knows all the tricks, how to tie you up and the dirty stuff. He's squeezing his head. He's pushing him down. Fury's like a boxing technician, even though he's a massive guy. And Wilder's a puncher. And he lost the fight from every round, in my opinion. What do you think, bro?
Yeah, he definitely lost the fight every round. He really looked uncoordinated. Mm-hmm. He looked unprepared. He looked, his corner man, I said this, man, respect to Marv Breland, he's a Brooklyn dude, mm-hmm. and I get all of that, man, but like he just looked like he didn't have a plan. Yep. Like, they went into that fight with, he's going to knock him out, and
we're going to go,
we out, right?
Yeah, we out.
Easy bread. Mm-hmm. And, I get that line of thinking, but, you got to respect the sport. And this is why a guy like that is who, look, we fuck with Deontay. We love
Deontay. Yeah.
And all of that. But, when people start putting him in the greatest kind of conversations, it's a little comical.
Yeah.
Because when you really look at the greatest, the really greatest fighters, mm-hmm. everyone that knows fighting or boxing or really understands that pugilistic science, they will tell you, Ali was fucking phenomenal at boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Holyfield was phenomenal at boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
Tyson, they would run off a list of things that they were great at.
Yeah.
And preparation was always something that they were great at.
Always.
You know, they really they understood their opponents. They, you know what I'm saying? He just looked like the dude who's been getting by on punching ability and never exactly. decided to work on his craft.
Exactly.
It's the center. It's the center in basketball who's just 7 feet tall.
He's big.
It's Eddie Curry, right? Like, it's Eddie Curry to some degree, right? Like, you're big, strong. You can overpower people, so you don't really work on your skills in a way that when you get to that point and you are challenged with people that are of the same size and the same strength, and you have to rely on your skills and your know-how.
And you ain't got none. Yeah.
So him, you know, look, I've always felt a little, I like him, but I've always felt a little weird with those costumes, the entrances.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
And I get it. You're trying to sell fights and you want to, you know, but like, dude, it looks to me like you spent more time designing and coming up with that costume than you did, you know, training.
Yeah.
And so to say that, you know, your costume weighed 45 pounds, well, first of all, you would have known that it weighed 45 pounds.
Yeah, right? That wasn't like the first time you put it on was that night, bro.
But then, and then second of all, like, you are a 6'7", 250-pound man, okay, having on 40 pounds, 45 pounds of perfectly distributed weight.
Yeah.
And not be taking your legs out from you in a way that you can use that as to say that that's why you lost the fight.
Come on, bro.
Like a 50-pound, like, dudes run with 50-pound vests on. Like,
exactly.
All the time. Like, that's
exactly.
That's not
uncommon, especially in boxing.
So to say that putting that outfit on for at most 12, possibly 15 minutes, at most.
Yeah. Wipe you out for the whole fight?
Then what was the whole training camp is going?
Exactly. Then what was you doing? If that could wipe you out, then you wouldn't need to train at all.
At all.
So, it's going to be a three because, you know, we've got heavyweights now. Heavyweights in boxing always generate the most income and the most, people want to see the most interest and income. So we're going to get a number three. And I don't know. I think Tyson's got in his head now. Like,
I think he felt, and we haven't really heard from him other than this particular excuse. Again, I wouldn't write him off because he has a massive power.
Oh, yeah, it's
power. And that is, and in the heavyweight division, like, that matters. And I mean, if they connect, any of those guys connect,
so
it's night, baby.
Yeah, it is night.
So he's got to punch his chance, obviously. And listen, that's what you kind of want, and that's kind of what you want to see. But, like, I definitely, if I'm him, I think it might be time for him to think about his corner and maybe readjusting some people, because right now I just don't really – they looked woefully unprepared. That was shocking. So by the third round, when you – like, there was no change in anything.
Nothing. It was like, all right,
knockout.
Going out there.
Yeah. And, like, they're saying that they're not 100% sure that his eardrum was busted, but they did say he needed stitches in his ear.
Okay.
So that's
where. There was a lot of blood coming out of his ear.
And listen, I'm no doctor. Let me be perfectly clear. But you have to remember that a guy like that is also, his heart rate is massive at that point.
True.
So your blood is pumping. You know what I'm saying?
So you might
have saw a lot more blood that would indicate a far worse injury than what it may have been.
Yeah, that's
like,
definitely.
We don't know, right?
Yeah.
But, like, they haven't confirmed that his eardrum was busted. We all assume that it was because we couldn't understand why he couldn't get his balance.
Yeah, and why someone's blood was coming out of his ear.
When you saw the blood, you recognize, oh, shit, his equilibrium is completely shot.
He can't stand
up. And the ropes saved him on several occasions.
Yeah, absolutely. He was getting pounded, like, lost every round, you know, so... So we'll see what number three brings. It's going to generate a massive amount of bread. And, you know, so God bless, you know, that. Oh, that was a sidebar real quick. That with the corner thing, what kind of didn't get, I think, reported enough was that that's what Tyson Fury did. He went to train at the Kronk Gym in Detroit with Emmanuel Stewart's, you know,
kids.
Yeah, and Hairs are what, you know, the guys that kind of took over. So that, he had a whole different way of boxing too, because he learned the, you know, a bunch of shit from them guys, you know. Yeah. It's almost like the Rocky shit where the white guy would train with the black guys. Yeah. That's exactly what happened. He moved to Detroit, trained with a bunch of niggas, came out there handling his business. Just wanted to mention that because that was a big thing. Both of y'all, did you watch Real Housewives?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. I watched. I thought this was a really good episode. I was very troubled by Cynthia and Mike and Mark and Kenya.
Yeah.
Very troubled, like, honestly, equally troubled. I think that the Cynthia Mike thing almost got a bit overlooked because the Mark Kenya thing was, you know, was basically the second half of the show and kind of overwhelmed the show. But the Mike Cynthia thing made me go, like, okay, I don't know if this nigga's really on her level.
I think the problem with Cynthia and Mike, so, okay, the first thing is Cynthia. Cynthia is not good at processing emotion or discussing it in a healthy manner. I'm sorry, that's Washington Heights, being Washington Heights in the background. She's not, so, like, we've seen it. We've seen it with her and Peter. We've seen it with her and her sister. Even with her and Noel, like, they communicate, but they haven't always communicated on a level that's appropriate for mother-daughter.
Yeah.
And even with Mike, like, she's trying to ask Mike, what's different about you that lets you know you're not going to cheat this time? But she's not going about the right way of doing it, which is putting Mike on the defensive, which is then in turn putting her on the defensive. And I don't think Cynthia's ever, like, I don't think her and Peter ever went to counseling that I can remember. Even, you know, they never really talked about their shit. And I think that she and Mike are going to have to find a way to communicate healthily if this marriage is going to work. Because there also is the fact of her being probably a little bit more into Mike than Mike is into her. But I think Mike loves her, and I think Mike wants to make a commitment. I just think that they're two grown-ass people who don't know how to talk about this shit.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, bro. Go ahead.
So my issue here is with Mike.
Yeah, mine is too.
And Mike, you okay, let me be clear about what I'm about to say. Standing in your truth does not absolve you of the responsibility to making your future wife feel comfortable about this decision.
And too many people feel like if you stand in your truth, then nothing, it doesn't matter. What you did in the past is wiped away.
Exactly. Like, all I have to do is admit that I have done things in the past, and immediately it's almost like, I get to go to it's like an altar call, right?
Yeah,
like I get to go and I get saved. Whoa. And then all that bad shit that I did
is just wiped away.
It's wiped away from today.
Yeah.
Right? And I just start my life from today. And Cynthia is voicing a very normal and understandable and rational concern.
Yeah.
Which is, if you've had all of these things, if all of these things were in it and you still stepped out on your wife or your, you know, people you were in committed relationships with, what is stopping you from doing that to me? They are in a long distance relationship.
Yep.
It is not uncommon for you to be gone weeks at a time.
Yep. Living out in LA too.
I'm 100% positive that she's seen the women that are around him that are his friends, right? So you don't really, like, I can understand her apprehension and wanting to discuss this a little further. That to me is not unreasonable for someone, you know, especially at this stage. Like, nigga, they 50.
Yeah, they're grown.
They're not 22.
Yeah.
And I really want this wedding, and I want to kind of get married so people can get off my back.
Yeah,
I want to get a new house. Right, yeah. Like these are grown adults. Like marrying each other means a meshing of families, and this is a little more complicated. And it seems to me like he's just on some real, like, well, you know, I did what I did, and that was it. And I don't have to explain it, or I don't have to
discuss it anymore.
And that's not really how this is going to play out, my nigga. Like, if you're looking to ease the woman that you're trying to spend the rest of your life with. If you're looking to ease her concerns, how you're handling this is not, it's not easy at all.
Yeah. I mean, and I think he showed us this, his thought process in the, well, a couple episodes ago, whatever, maybe it was even last episode, with when he said he had all his friends at the house, and he was talking about how he's never really been in love before, in front of his daughter, and that was a fucking mess. But it's like, and I think Cynthia probably was always like, okay, well, if you've never been in love before, you married this other woman and you had kids with this other woman, like, again, then why am I different? Like, why, what am I, I'm sure you treated them in a way to make them want comfortable enough to think it was cool, and deep down with you, it really wasn't cool.
So but not, that's the thing. I think the question isn't for Cynthia, somebody else said this, the question for Cynthia isn't why am I different? Because the woman actually has nothing to fucking do with it. The question is,
why are you different?
And that's what I think she couldn't express to him. She wasn't, like, I'm not blaming Cynthia. I'm just saying I don't think she was asking him the right question. And she was kind of circling, like, okay, well, like, what? And Cynthia also does this thing where when she's having a difficult conversation, she does this kind of half laugh.
Yeah, the laughing.
Because you can tell she's, like, uncomfortable with it instead of coming straight over the plate with it. And I think it also makes it awkward.
But what irked me about, one of the many things that irked me about Mike in that conversation is he never answered the question. He just immediately was like, well, you ain't perfect.
He was like, I've addressed my whatever. Yeah.
And if I fuck up, then that's on me. That ain't comforting, my nigga.
Yeah, like so he says, that was the most fascinating thing is when he said, you know, if I do this again, then I'm totally the blame.
Right, like you
won't. Like, that's not really, that doesn't really ease a woman's.
Exactly.
Yeah, like.
That tells us that it's still a shot that you might do it.
And again, I get it. He's trying to build in a I'm not perfect, you know, sort of excuse.
Yeah.
And I think by and large, we kind of understand that people are not perfect. Mm-hmm. But I think when you keep drilling, right? The perfect imperfections, and these are my flaws, and these are my flaws, and these are my flaws, right? Again, this is all about just acknowledging those flaws, not really addressing those flaws. And what you do is you build in a justifiable reason because if this happens, right?
I told you that I'm not perfect.
And every woman looks at Cynthia and says, why did you think you were different?
Yep.
And guess what she got to do? She got to eat it.
She got to eat it. You got to eat it.
Now, listen, Cynthia is an attractive woman. She's a worldly woman.
Yeah, she's been around.
She will have no shortage of men trying to keep time.
Yeah.
Okay? Yeah. Male suitors will not be, you know, sniffing around. So that's of no consequence to her. And I think she know, like, that doesn't mean anything to her. She's marrying this dude. She wants to know, like, yo, I'm in this shit for the long haul, man. I don't want to fucking be out here at 57.
Yeah, exactly.
Tom joined the cruise.
They were dating Mr. Earl.
With Leon, nigga.
What?
Person is in his white linen on.
She said, she's like, oh, it's my second marriage, and if it's pleasant with my second marriage, they're my last. Like, this is it. I'm not trying to be, like you said, be out here dating and shit. Like, this is what I'm trying to do. But, you know, he's not. You know, again, it's TV and we don't know all the stuff, but from what we watch on TV, he's not putting her at ease with what he's saying or how he's reacting to it, like getting defensive and stuff like that. It's not going to make her feel comfortable about how he's moving. And then the second thing was, so Mark was on this show and Nene says, you know, Nene with her fuckery in the clips for next week, she said something which I found very interesting. She said, I've never, ever seen Mark and Kenya be affectionate with each other.
Right.
And I was like, yo, that, like, every time he's on that show, he's talking down to her. He's shutting her up. He's ignoring her. He's doing these kind of half-joking threats. Like, he did it this week. Like,
he's
yo.
So rude.
Like when they took the daughter to the swimming thing. And he's like, yo, no, next time we're going to drown Mommy and it'll just be me. I'm like, that's not funny, B.
He's
like,
so rude.
They just, it's like, that's not even a joke. Like, to talk about killing your wife. Like, that's not funny. Like, He's just rude to her, like, nonstop.
It's actually emotional abuse.
It's like, exactly what it is.
And I feel like, I'm talking complete shit. I don't know Mark mm-hmm. from a hole in the wall. And none of us know Kenya in real life. We just mm-hmm. know how ridiculous she is on TV. But I feel like he feels like he has to put Kenya in her place.
Yeah, gotta keep her in check.
Yeah, keep her in check. Like, he barely lets her talk, you know. Mm-hmm. The whole thing with him basically just ignoring how she feels about, even though she's ridiculous about Nene, Nene is an equally ridiculous person.
Yeah, but for him to just be like, fuck that, they coming, shut up.
They coming, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, and not even saying to her, you know what, I want Nene to come because I think you and Nene do too much, but just being like, well, Nene's fine with me, so I don't fucking care.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. I'm good with her and Greg. Me and Greg, we text. And even she said him and Greg be texting, it seemed like she was like, what? she didn't even know. Like, this nigga's like, whatever, nigga.
Yeah,
like,
it wasn't even a conversation like, I want to do this so y'all can reconcile. It was like, I'm going to do this because I don't give a fuck how you feel.
Exactly.
And it's, on the one hand, it's easy to, like, kind of gloss over it because Kenya's despicable and it's like, okay, good, somebody checks her. But that's her husband. And yeah. I see her playing out her need for approval that she had to go through with her parents.
Yeah, with her
you know what
mom,
I mean? Like, remember,
yeah.
Kenya was abandoned by her parents.
Yeah.
We saw her go through this whole process of trying to get her father to fucking acknowledge her.
Yep. It
wasn't really, you know, happening on the level that she wanted to. And I think that this is like a cycle that she's playing out with her husband. You were going to say something, Sean?
Yeah, I think that because Kenya is not a sympathetic person on television, mm-hmm. We kind of, as an audience, right, the audience kind of tolerates this in a way. Because initially it was like, okay, this is a little weird. You know, they don't seem connected.
Yeah.
And then it kind of started to be, okay, he's pretty mean.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of really evolving into, this doesn't feel good. Like, this doesn't feel okay to watch.
Yeah, it's not entertaining.
Yes, this feels wildly uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And even when she talks about, and it's very interesting, this isn't for cameras. This is also, when she talks about them having sex,
yeah,
she says, you know, she basically mimics him as a caveman. Like,
get up, bend over.
Yes. So what I read from that is what she's really saying is like, you're not really intimate. Like, we have sex, but there's no intimacy involved in that.
There's no
that.
Love.
There's no, nigga, there's no like.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if he, like, golf, like, if she got hit by a car and that nigga was standing there, like, I don't know that, you know, he just seems like the type of dude that'll
you're
be
like, she should have stood down the street.
Yeah, you all right?
Yeah, you all right?
You all right?
You good?
Like, nigga, not, you know, he's not calling ambulance.
Yeah.
He just seems, and to me, even when you don't like people, right? Like, even when you don't want to be around them, there's a level of being cordial. There's a level of being understanding just on a human level that I think he particularly doesn't have with her.
Yeah.
And, like, dude, like, you're wild understanding to everyone but this woman. Like, you're accommodating.
Everybody else's side.
Right.
Everybody else is, you're accommodating.
It's on purpose, clearly.
Yes, yes. And that's what, to me, is really sort of the sad thing, right, is we're, you know, and again, I'm no, you know, psychologist or sociologist, right, but what we're watching is, right, this very confident, capable, attractive woman basically be broken down to, you know, a fucking mute. Like, she's basically being rendered, you know, just shut up. Just go fucking stand in the corner.
Literally, Ken, shut up.
And watching her do it is what is fascinating, which is, you know, why Nene says, yo, that's, they're all like, I would have never imagined.
Yeah.
That to happen, you know.
I forgot about that part when she was talking about the sex thing. I forgot about that. That was was like, wow. That was very telling and revealing.
You know, and I think
it also seems like they're trying to reconcile because, you know, they had announced the divorce before the season premiere, which I think they're probably still going to go through on camera, but or at least like the separation part of it. But they've been, she's been posting him on socials tentatively lately, so it looks like maybe they're trying to work
trying to figure it out. And also, this was the first time that she talked about them not living together.
Well, we like, knew they didn't live together.
No. But she talked about, like, what are we doing? Like, I can't. Is she moving to Atlanta? She's like, well, maybe with this thing, maybe he'll finally move. Like, she's like, you can see it's I'm not surprised, really weighing on her that she's basically a single mother. You know what I'm saying? Like, she's a single mother. He pops down for a weekend. Pops down for a weekend, you know, fucking beats her down emotionally, talks shit about her, then goes back to New York and does whatever he does. And she's doing all this shit, you know, like alone. And she's like, yo, like, are we going to live in New York together? Are we going to live in Atlanta? Like, what the fuck are we doing?
I think one of the things, too, that you have to remember is when you have someone like Kenya who is, I don't like the word socialite, but is a recognizable, famous person and does have a very, you know, heavy social life, right? You know, she's got to go to these fucking events alone. Like at some point, right? Like, there's a coupling things that, you know, sort of happen, and you kind of want to be there with your mate, right? You kind of want to be there with somebody that you know, and everybody's there with their, you know, with their significant others or whatever the case may be, and you're kind of just, you know, waltzing in alone.
And I
get the sense that that's probably, you know, also weighing on her.
Especially, you know, somebody who always wanted to be married so badly.
And now has the child, right? And now has all of these things, except, you know, she's in that picture alone, right? Yep.
Taking vacations alone,
which is why I feel like she's so mean to other people, right?
I agree.
Like her, because she can't take that anger out in her marriage.
Yeah.
Right? Because she knows that any pushback means this nigga might not never come back. Right.
Yeah,
so all of that stuff then gets shifted
to everyone else for frivolous shit. I definitely think she's on her, like, as a mean girl, she's at like her mean girl apex because she's so unhappy and, you know, going after Tanya and this and that one is based on Tanya, you know, relationship. You know, seemingly to be pretty solid, and she's like, "I hate this girl. She's happy." Like, you know,
so cold in it.
Yeah, let me try to figure out how to fuck it up.
And,
you know,
and she's attractive.
Yeah,
she doesn't like shit like that.
Not just Tanya attractive. Aside from Candy, Tanya is the most like genuine, and Candy is genuine in a different way. But Tanya is the most just like genuine, friendly.
Yeah, she don't gossip about, like, nobody. Never.
She ain't trying to prove no points. She don't be trying to throw no shade. Like, she just be there to be there. Like, she just wants to have a good time with her girlfriends. And I know that Kenya cannot stand that.
She's like, where's your dark side?
And yeah, that Tanya literally
doesn't really have one.
Could give a fuck about her at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, next week looks like it's more intensity. I feel bad. I feel bad for both of them, man. I wanted to mention real quick, we try to, like, don't go too crazy with politics on the show because we could take up 3 hours. But did you see any clips from the Bernie interview, 60 Minutes interview?
The joint about Castro?
Yeah, well, he talked about Castro. He talked about a lot of things on that.
And I saw some of the clips about Castro. I'll be honest, I'm skimming election shit right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm still tired from 2016.
Yeah.
And I'm just waiting to fucking vote for the primary.
And Anderson Cooper interviewed him. Anderson Cooper been on fire lately. He's been tearing people.
Anderson's been going
he ripped Pete Buttigieg. Not Pete Buttigieg. What's his name? The guy who got out of jail? The guy from Chicago.
But he
murdered him, and the guy couldn't even say nothing back because he was right. He was like, "Yo, like, now you on some clemency shit, but like you had 3,000 cases that you just ignored to the point where they had to sue you to pay attention to them. But now because you went to jail, now it's some other shit." And he was ripping him like, "Yo," he cursed at him. He's like, "Yo, everything you say is bullshit." Like he went hard at him. he interviewed Bernie Sanders on 60 Minutes. I already saw clips of it as well.
Rob Blagojevich.
Blagojevich. But one of the things, the thing that caught my attention about the Bernie interview was he asked Bernie about, you know, free college and free healthcare, and he asked Bernie how much free healthcare would cost. Bernie said right now they've estimated with his budget it'll cost $30 trillion.
And how are we going to pay for that, Bernard?
Taxes.
Right.
And then he said, Anderson dug deeper because he was going hard. He was like, well, what about free college and all this other stuff? And Bernie was like, I don't know how much it's going to cost.
But you've been campaigning on that for 5 years.
Exactly. And so Anderson was like, how you don't know how much it's going to cost? He said, yeah, we could pay for it with, you know, taxing Wall Street. He said, yeah, but how are you? You don't know what you're going to be taxed. You don't even know what it's going to cost. So how are you planning to tax Wall Street when you don't have a number on what you're taxing them for?
He don't even have a code. Like, he doesn't even have, okay, we're going to tax X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And this is the tax we're going to implicate. That's going to generate an estimated .. And exactly. In turn, we're going to do .. with that.
And this is how long it's going to take. The plan. I've been saying this.
Yeah, here winging it.
I've been saying this to Bernie supporters forever. Everything he's saying sounds good and it's sexy and shit.
High in the sky, man.
No plan. He has no plan. He has no
plan.
And he's alienating. Now he's like, Dem establishment, you will not stop us. Republican establishment, you will not stop us. So you're alienating people, which is what he's done his entire time in Congress. Bernie's track record in Congress is awful. Nobody fucks with him.
Nobody. Hillary said that, and everybody got Hillary.
Everybody attacked her because everybody was like, his base likes him. I was like, she's not talking about his base. She's talking about other fucking lawmakers, the people that he's going to have to work with if he actually.
Exactly. He has no friends in the Senate that are going to be able to knock out. Like, and if presenting a $30 trillion budget is going to be we know it's not going to get passed. It's going to be laughed at. They're going to be like, Sam, what are you talking about? He's basically doing what Trump did, but just on the left.
Right.
He's just selling dreams. And it's a lot of people going through some tough times in this country. So I'm not, I'm not trying to downplay any of that. Healthcare.
Listen,
I
love the idea of healthcare, of M for A. I love it in theory. I just need to know how it's going. Like, I'm not voting for you because you say it. I need to know how you're fucking going to do it. I need to know you can execute the shit.
Exactly.
And I don't have faith in Bernie.
People have this idea that they think Bernie's going to, if he does get elected, he's going to go in office and all of a sudden everything's just going to be free. It's like, nothing is free. I was going back and forth with somebody on Instagram about this. It was like, but in Canada, blah, blah, blah. I said, but you know the tax rate in Canada? It's crazy.
Right.
Like, yes, they do have free health care and stuff like that, for sure. But they taxed out the ass.
I also find...
Yeah, go ahead, bro, because you're our financial advisor on the podcast.
No. I couldn't even imagine the intricacies of what it would take to get a panel of economists to sit down and go over this shit.
Exactly.
But what I do want to say is I find it awfully interesting how Bernie has ultimately skated on his 94 crime bill record.
Yep.
Like everyone else's feet fell to the fire.
Yep, no, they ripped Biden apart. They ripped Hillary apart.
Yeah, they always say Hillary, who by the way wasn't even elected.
She was the first lady.
But whenever I've pushed back on Bernie supporters about that, they say that the only reason he voted for the crime bill was because of some other legislation that was tied up in it, which to me is an excuse. I'm like, but he voted for the bill. Like, how are you attacking Hillary, who had no vote, when he actually voted for the bill? Like, what are you talking about?
What I do understand, and what I do, I have an idea, clearly, and I have a person that I want to support. But what it is fascinating to me is that when I watch how these campaigns, and I use that not for them, but like the campaigns of influencers and journalists in particular, has been really sort of interesting to me, because I see so many people going at people like Bloomberg and going at people like Bernie, and they're doing these massive threads and these massive mm-hmm. posts and these massive pieces mm-hmm. on why these are the worst people of the Joe Biden. These are the worst people in the world you can vote for. And no one is actually endorsing a candidate anybody. That they
right,
want
to
be.
Yeah. They're just tearing down everybody.
So what I would advise to people like that is that when you have a voice of reason, when you have a voice that people come to, you have to be very mindful of that voice, not with just what you say, but in the way that you say it, because at a certain point you will become white noise.
Yep.
And when you are, it's like a teacher. And if a teacher is consistently just beating all of the students up all of the time, right, that is no longer going to be enough for a student to jump at, right? Like yeah, it's gonna yeah. it will turn into white noise.
You turn into Charlie Brown.
It's inconsequential because mm-hmm. I know what's coming, right? And that's what I'm starting to see here. And I'm watching people and people are like laying stopping frisk at the feet of Bloomberg, and I'm like,
that shit was already happening.
Like I'm not saying that he should skate on endorsing and even doubling down on stop and frisk,
yeah.
but to lay stop and frisk at the feet of Bloomberg is not only the spirit of it is wrong, it's literally wrong. It's incorrect.
It's just a lie. But you know, and I know what I'm finding more and more, not surprisingly because of internet, half, if not more than half the people that do stuff like that, they're not even from here. It's like, man, you ain't from New York.
What? They not from here. Or they moved here, like, in the middle of Bloomberg's second term or some
exactly.
shit.
Exactly.
Like, if you weren't here during the Giuliani administration,
matter of fact, we could even take this back to Dinkins.
No doubt.
Right.
We could take this back to Dinkins because a lot of this shit, you know, there were things that Giuliani picked up that were already in place.
Yep.
And again, they doubled down on things.
Yeah, they turned the heat on.
And yes, and the spirit in which these things were set into place obviously had unintended consequences. And mm-hmm. everybody is a Monday morning quarterback, and hindsight is always 20/20, right? And we know now with these sort of situations. But my nigga, if you feel free to Google homicides in New York.
Yeah.
And let me know between 88 and like 92, it's like 2,000 a year, bro. It's
crazy.
And that's just homicides. We're not talking about robberies. We're
yeah,
not talking
rapes
about
and, rapes and kidnappings, all the other dumb shit.
And this is why I always tell you, if you meet a nigga from New York that came of age, if he was like a teenager between like 72 and 92, that nigga will kill you. For real. Like, for real, my nigga.
No doubt.
Them 60-year-old niggas in New York.
Yeah, yeah. They're not
about that action.
Yeah. You had to be.
You ain't had no choice.
Yeah, because the streets was wild, wild west.
Brutal.
And the cops was around, they was worse than the niggas on the street.
It was an awful place. And again, I'm not and not to veer off on just the Bloomberg side of it all, but like there are a lot of opinions that are revisionist history. There are a lot of opinions that are giving hindsight and they are not adding color and context to those opinions. They are I don't want to say bandwagoning, because I don't think that the people who are against Bloomberg are necessarily wrong, but I feel like they are fanning flames
it's a cool thing to be.
Yes, and it's a little unnecessary because you can have he's a flawed candidate.
He is.
Like no one is.
But the thing is, they all are. And let me say this is my theory, right? I feel like a lot of the, and I think we've kind of talked about this before, a lot of the kind of younger leaning voters are fucked up because they came of age during Obama.
And it's
always supposed to feel like that. Obama, you know, was kind of, you know, the perfect candidate at the perfect time with the perfect family. You know, it was perfect. You cannot recreate that. It's not going, I don't say it's not going to happen again, but it's not happening now. So
it's never happened before in my motherfucking life.
Exactly. And maybe it'll happen, you know, I don't want to, I just never say never, but like you said, the odds of it happening again are pretty unlikely. So if you're looking for that, you're wasting your time. And that's why one of the many reasons I believe that Hillary lost, because people were looking for that energy in 16, and now they're looking for that energy even more.
Well, that's
more.
Why they like Bernie, just because Bernie is culture person. It's all culture person.
Yeah.
Bernie, because like the hardest core Bernie supporters, it's almost like a hippie cult type.
Yeah.
They're so fervent.
It's like the Grateful Dead fans.
Yeah, it's like something, you know? Because they like him because he's quirky. And
he
like,
marched with King. He was bringing up the King. That was 50 years ago, bro. Like,
And like they're looking for personality, and the fact is that a lot of like that is part of the problem. Part of the reason we have Trump in office is because you're looking for personality
and not actual policies
govern. Which mm-hmm. Hillary was the most qualified person for the fucking job.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
Regardless of what you thought of her, she was the most effective, most qualified person for the job. So it's like. You thought she was cold. You thought she was calculating. You thought she wasn't warm.
I don't want another Clinton in office.
Yeah, all that shit though was why she got to where she was. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's. I feel like people don't. As much as we complain about politics, people are still looking for the wrong shit in their politicians.
Exactly, they're looking for.
I think
looking for entertainment.
My theory, and I'll leave it at this. My theory is that because Obama had such a very short record, he really did present as an unflawed candidate. Because he didn't have a 15 year, a 20 year history in the Senate where you had things to question.
Yep.
And so I think what that 8 years has done is that it has given us the idea, has given, you know, especially young voters, this idea that there are candidates that will not be flawed, right? Like that, like you should be in agreement with everything that they've done.
Exactly.
Or I should say everything that you're aware that they've done, right? Yep. And the moment that anything sort of comes up, and we understand that politics is a little more complicated than that. You're going to have to vote for people that you don't agree with 100% for the greater good of the things that are going to impact you and impact the people that you love and care about.
Exactly. So, yeah. So that 60 Minutes thing, I was like, wow, this nigga don't have, you know, whatever. He don't even know, 30 trillion.
Yo, nigga just had a heart attack. Like,
and won't release his medical records.
Yeah, he doing the Donald Trump shit now. My shit's good. Don't worry about it.
Exactly. And his people are like, oh no, it's cool. Come on, man. I wanted to mention O'Gala Detroit, who gave her man a rental property.
Oh my God. Okay. Let me do this, please. I can do this. And Sean, you can come in on the back end. So this video went viral a few days ago, earlier this week. A woman, she got to be in her early 20s, gave her boyfriend for his birthday. They're actually in Fort Lauderdale for his birthday. They're at a rental property with some friends, whatever. She pulls out a bag. She gives him, I think one of the gifts was cologne. The other gift is like a folder with a bow on it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, what the fuck is this, basically? And she's like, I got you a rental property.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing he says is, I ain't fixing up this shit.
I thought you was going to give me a Rolex or a chain.
He didn't say immediately. So he's looking at it and he says, he mumbles. I have watched this back several times. He mumbles, oh, off Dexter and something. So then he's like, you know, I wanted like a Rolex, a chain, at which point she looks to the person filming and says something to the point of, I told you he was going to say that. Hmm. So Twitter being Twitter went crazy arguing, this man wanted a Rolex over a house. That's why people can't get nowhere.
That's why black people can't.
You could flip that house. You could buy yourself 30 million Rolexes, blah, 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 blah. Here's the thing. The people arguing against the property aren't so much saying, this is what people don't understand. The people arguing against gifting someone an investment property, mm-hmm. of which I am one of those people, right? It's not so much that that an investment property isn't a smart choice or isn't wise, you do not tie someone into that level of obligation as a birthday gift without a discussion. Because basically, if you are giving me something that requires that I sink time and significant resources into in order to get a return from without my input, that's not a gift. You just gave me a construction bill, a tax bill, a sanitation bill. You know what I mean? You just
gifted put a weight on my back.
A few years of fucking work, you know, and a lot of people were like, well, he could just sell it in return. I'm like, that's still something he has to do. Like, you know what I mean?
And, the nigga might not want to be a landlord.
Right. Anderson is in Detroit. Anderson, one of the most depressed neighborhoods in Detroit, right? There is a full commercial property in that same neighborhood that's going for $199,000, a full apartment building. That should tell you what the value is.
Where they're living at. Exactly. How they living.
And she posted pictures of the house. That shit needs a new, just what we can.
I knew everything.
That's what we can eyeball. A new roof, new windows, the foundation's crooked. The porch needs to be replaced. It looks like it's on cinder blocks, like back in the day. It looks like it has asbestos in the kitchen. Like, it's a teardown at best. And it's not a valuable neighborhood. So, like, what real estate Twitter and fucking generational wealth Twitter don't seem to fucking understand is that, A, all real estate investments aren't good real estate investments.
Absolutely not.
B, flipping is not easy. Don't let
There's lemons every type of aspect. You said, just because you bought a house, that doesn't mean that neighborhood is gonna increase in value or not. That means, you know, it just,
right.
You know.
And at best, you're going to get Section 8 tenants who are going to pay you $500 a month.
They're gonna be water main breaks. Your bathroom.
They're gonna steal your copper every time you come in because you don't even know what's going on in the fucking foundation of the house. The shit we can't see the hidden cost.
Yeah, we don't even know if it's gonna pass inspections for living. Go ahead, bro.
You definitely. Well, that was. I mean, you guys have.
That was definitely an as is buy.
That to me was, it was kind of fascinating. And I recognize that social media has really put enormous amounts of pressure on people to do shit like this. Because first of all, you don't buy a home for somebody, right? Like the reality is that in order to buy this home, unless it was a cash purchase, right? Like, you have to be the guarantor on a loan.
On a loan.
Right.
Right.
Well, like, that was definitely a cash purchase. That was an couple grand.
Yeah, but right now, and that to me, let's just say, you know, she bought that house for the sake of numbers, $25,000. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a significant amount of capital to just be done with.
If you have 25 grand up.
Or yes, because we don't. Again, you have no idea. You have no idea what the rental market is in that area. You have no idea what you're about to walk into. And
you didn't first get a chance to set a Reno budget. You didn't get a chance to like determine how much time it's going to take you to flip this, what it needs. Like, that's what people don't understand. You don't give somebody that.
We just watched on Real Housewives. We watched Robin do this. Robin bought a house that was not even half as bad shape of this one.
Mm-hmm.
Not only was she, I think, 3 months longer. She had to hold that mortgage 3 months longer.
I think it was a little longer than that even.
Might have been 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. She was also $38,000 over budget.
Yep, over budget.
Over budget.
Yeah, that wasn't her budget. It was 38 over what she allotted.
So you've now cut into your profit. So I think that it's just fascinating to see people think that, you know, rental properties, and this is also a big thing of, I'm using air quotes now, buying back the block.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed is that there's a lot of people that are really willing to be slumlords. They're really willing to have their folks, you know, in these shitty places under the guise of redistribution of wealth.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine, her husband suddenly passed away, like literally unexpected. Mm-hmm. And they had a rental property. It was in Newark. Okay. And, you know, obviously, you know, this is a grieving widow, right? Like, I'm not going to stand by idly. So I took over the job of, you know, helping her with this property.
Okay. How, now, was it a multi-family joint?
It's a multi-family. It's a three-family joint.
Okay.
Like, dude, I can't really explain to you the amount of shit that, like, if I did not have, so I have a guy that I know that is really a master electrician. He teaches. He's a city inspector and also teaches a class.
Wow.
He's a master electrician.
Yeah.
I had him come over to the point where he was like, I couldn't even, you know, it's really not much I could do here. Like, this wow. is a fucking, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've had contractors, my guys that I use on my home, like people I know.
Yeah.
Come by, take a look at stuff, you know, ended up needing a seal painting, had to rewire fire alarms, had to like, you can't just be out here all willy-nilly, man.
Yeah,
just having people living in shit shows. And you gotta, you know, like, you look up and there's an unexpected $800 expense or unexpected $1,000 expense. You and have to have a level of...
And if something goes wrong, they calling you.
You have to have...
You're the landlord.
Nigga, I had to go one time and do some shit that I don't even do in my own house. Nigga, I'm trying to cut off the water from inside the wall
wow.
with a fucking plumbing pipe. Wow. That I had to go to Home Depot to get because it was a leak. And I didn't have, you know what I'm saying? I didn't have a person that could just jump right to
yeah,
it.
Just jump
like, again, I'm in Newark, dude. I'm not right. in, like, my, and I told him, nigga, my hours of operation is 9 to 9:15.
I'm not coming over here at nighttime.
I'm right. in and out of this motherfucker. Because I was over there one night, and it was like a scene from The Wire. And I said, no, nigga, I'm good. I am never... coming back over here after dark. You could be a, you niggas need to put that money in an envelope and mail that shit off, nigga. I'm not coming over here to pick up no more.
Pick up nothing.
Right, and people kept talking about, well, he could just hire a property manager. He could just, and I'm like, yo.
Where's he getting this money from? Where's he getting all this money from?
Lost money, exactly. Somebody else was like, well, he could just hold on to it for 5 years and let gentrification catch up and pay.
You can't hold up to nothing. You got to pay for the shit.
For 5 years, like,
here's the other thing. So this is what I also find very interesting, right? Because not only are you paying property taxes because there is a building on that property. Now, the city will adjust, obviously, if it is not inhabited, right? Like,
yeah.
there's no... But you will still pay property taxes on it. But what is most interesting is that now you have an insurance liability.
Yep.
Because right. if, God forbid, somebody breaks in there and, like, you know, kill someone
yeah.
or, you know, or catch on fire.
Yeah.
So whatever the case might be, if you don't have insurance, my nigga, you fucked.
You are fucked.
And so
you have to maintain that shit.
You still have to pay. So basically,
we're paying all kind of sanitation bills. When
I've had
nobody lived there in ages.
We had a family property in St. Croix. I basically, man, like $300 a month. I was just sending. Now, again, this is, you know, it's $300 a month. Now,
yeah.
is that going to be backbreaking? No, right? But when you are dealing with such small margins,
mm-hmm.
right, you $300 a month is your profit.
Yep.
There's not a lot of profit here.
Yeah, it ain't like making $10,000 a month in profit.
My nigga, he at best, he would have needed, and I'm just guesstimating here, he would have probably needed a home equity line of credit to repair that place in the to the tune of 200 and maybe 225.
Yeah.
Like, that's real bread,
not,
bro.
Like, yeah. he's not going to get 200 to 225 back out of that bitch.
That's my point. So,
not in that neighborhood.
So when people, when you buy homes like that, and you know, she had bought him... And again, I don't agree with the theory, but if she had bought him a turnkey place with a rent roll, with a profit margin, that's one thing. But you bought the nigga a job. You gave the nigga, you said, here, nigga, this is work for your birthday. Happy birthday, nigga.
Happy birthday,
it's a
nigga.
Full-time job.
For the next 5 years, you're going to be dealing with this bullshit.
So yeah. I went on Homegirl's Instagram because I'm fascinated. So a couple of things. At first, her Instagram was public because she is like a little influencer of sorts in Detroit, I guess. His was private. He has now unlocked his page, and one of his most recent messages, Sean, I actually meant to send this to you, was somebody tell Mom Scott Young to call me because they're getting so much attention.
I want to be on Real Housewives. I mean, I love Hip Hop.
Let's slow down, nigga.
Hip Hop Detroit.
Let's relax.
This nigga is 152% a drug dealer, like for show. He has three little kids. They're like, they look like they're like 7, 5, and 3. He buys each of them iced out name chains for the birthday. He bought her a Rolex for Valentine's Day. Now, whether it's an authentic Rolex remains to be seen because the diamonds, my Jay-Z voice, them wasn't Rolex diamonds, but none of that. But that made the whole shit even more funny to me for everybody who was like, why would she get him a Rolex? Why would she do? Because apparently that's how they get down.
That's how he gets down. And the last thing a nigga who's moving the street like that want to deal with a fucking rental property that's going to keep him, you know, it's at one place a lot and, you know, and dumping money into the shit.
Right.
If anything, he's going to make it a trap house.
He wants quick turnover. And to Sean's point, social media is on a lot of this because when she posted the pictures of the house, her shit was on some, you know, I'm a boss. I'm trying to build my man into a businessman. And I'm the kind of chick I am. And yada, yada. And it's like, you did it for the gram.
First of all, you gave your man a gift with like 50-11 people taping it. Like, that was just that, like, what are we doing here? Right?
Okay,
that's the new hot shit for young folks, but like, you didn't get the reaction that you thought you were going to get. You said, see, I knew, because y'all had this conversation. And what you're trying to do is you're trying to make dude something that he don't want to be. And that's fine. You know what I'm saying? He don't want it. Like, not everybody.
He don't want that.
And even like, if he wasn't.
Was exactly what they were doing. Being in Fort Lauderdale, going to Miami, fake balling.
Going to Club Live.
He wanted to do, and you know what, man, and I don't know those people, and that's all fine because you need those people in the world too, right? But like, not everybody is, you know, up for this property ownership shit, and a lot of people, you know, say that they do this and they are partners of, you know, companies, and you know that the very small percentages, very small hands, in those dealings, but like, that's not an easy or fly by night, you know, operation.
No, it's not.
It's just not. And the idea that you would get something that would require that much work tells me you have no real concept of how money works, how real estate, you know, really, really does work.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I to flip it, like, you just thought you just think you're going to just pop up one day and then you're going to get $500,000 for a house.
Exactly.
Worst real estate market in the country.
They pay niggas.
The worst real estate market in the country.
Detroit, I'm not sure if they still are, but the city was paying niggas
to take shit.
To take them houses.
Yeah, because
you were getting rebates. If you were a city employee, fire department, police departments, they were literally giving you $100,000 of credit.
Yeah.
In order for you to take those houses. They wanted to move people back into the city. And listen, Detroit is not the shit show. We understand that there is a shit show in Detroit. I'm not going to pretend that it's not, right? But I've been to Detroit recently, within the last 2 years.
Yeah, like, they gentrified just like everybody else.
Yeah, and not just gentrifying. There were neighborhoods that were depressed, but not fucked up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It wasn't this hellhole that it was made out to be. Now, there are places that are hellholes, right? Like any place else in the world. I tell people that all the time. Like, Park Avenue and like the worst section of New York is like 6 miles apart.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that, you know, like, it's a world away, but it's not that far.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I you know, I get it, and thinking that, you know, gentrification is going to come here and we going to be on top and we going to, like, I mean, it may not work that way.
Gentrification is neighborhood by neighborhood. So, like I said, it's not, because somebody thought when I posted like Anderson, Detroit, and I kind of did like the gif of do the right thing where everybody throws their hands up like, oh, and this girl from Detroit thought I was clowning Detroit. And I was like, I'm not clowning Detroit. I'm arguing against the people who think that anytime you buy a rental property,
it's a good thing.
It's a good thing. And yeah. It's like the market matters. The neighborhood matters. You can't say a whole city is being gentrified. Gentrification goes neighborhood by neighborhood. Yeah. So you bought a house. People who were from Detroit were like, that shit off Dexter, oh, hell fucking. You know what I mean? Like, there's no fucking way. So it's like, all of this shit matters. Every investment is not a good investment because people act like we haven't seen all these people lose their shirts in the housing crash. You know what I mean? Like, there's a reason.
I think what's interesting here too is that I think what you saw was a lot of people that agreed with this are a lot of younger people who were not adults when the housing market collapsed in the way that it did, and B, have grown up largely with the social media influence. And so the boss idea and the I don't want to work for someone idea and all of that all of those subcultures have really sort of permeated that generation.
Yeah.
And it's made them think that anytime they do something that is owning something or anything like that is great. Like I've watched people, basically I've watched people leave $70,000 a year jobs, right, with full
healthcare
packages that might be close to $100,000 a year, and now you work for yourself,
you fucked up,
and that's great. But you're barely clearing 30 and you ain't got no insurance.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
So and you have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Yeah. And so all of that is to say you don't have to I understand the fervor in which people are reacting to not wanting to be a work for hire. Like no one's saying you should wanna just work for a company for 50 years and get your gold watch. But like this idea that you're gonna take hard-earned capital and just throw it into a business I've had these conversations where people have come to me and I want you to invest and I want to do this and I want to do that, and there have been several times where I've been like, okay, let's sort of look at what's going on here, and then I'm like, this ain't really it for me, bro.
I would throw 40 grand in that and get that back. I'm like, where are you getting the 40 grand you're going
where are you getting the 40 from?
Where are you getting the time from?
Niggas are talking about I'm throwing 40 into it, and I don't mean this in any disrespectful way, but niggas talking about I'm going to throw 40 grand into it. Why are you working in a cubicle? And yeah. I don't mean with respect to anybody who's working in a cubicle, but let's just be honest here. Like, 40 grand sitting in somebody's, I don't know what the stat is, but there's a stat where like everybody's basically like a paycheck away from being bankrupt, or most people, a lot of people don't even have $1,000 in their savings.
Yeah, that's
across the board. That's not just black folks, that's people, period.
That's
American the way.
Income.
Exactly. So you, if you got 40 grand sitting in the bank, God bless you, but like that's not realistic to the majority of people.
Right. Well, these are also the same stupid motherfuckers who say that they would pass up $100,000 cash to have dinner.
You could have dinner with Jay-Z. Like, nigga, what
this
are you talking about?
This is dumbest shit.
$1 million or dinner or a ticket to the Rock Nation brunch. What are you talking about?
You call the Jay-Z, he tell you how to make, shut your ass.
Jay-Z's going to be like, why is this nigga close to me?
Right. It's like it, the concept of business, and that's the problem with social media entrepreneurs to an extent. Some of them do it right. But like the concept of how business really works, it's so alien to motherfuckers. It's just like this, let me DM you and you're going to give me the shot and I'm going to get some fucking money. And that's what these same people are who are arguing for. Like, oh, of course, she gave him a house. That's generational wealth. We supposed to be doing shit. And then people are like, we supposed to be buying back the block and building up our communities. And I'm like, it's an investment. It's an investment. It means that you are putting something into it. It is a risk. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
It is not guaranteed. Y'all got to be smart with your fucking decisions and know what you're doing. But to your point, Sean, that is part of it. It's this influencer culture. We are of age where all of us have friends who tried their hands. I would be surprised if everybody I know didn't have friends who tried their hands at this flip shit at some point. Right? Yeah. That shit is not, and I've not even done the flipping, but I've had to reno or demo or clean out older homes.
It's not a joke. Like a even when niggas be like, yo, man, I wish I would have bought the brownstone back when they was doing them for $1. Okay, yeah, they were giving brown. There was that program, that mythical program.
But
it came with nothing. Like, yeah. Those, even if you got the brown before dial, it wasn't like a fresh brownstone. It was like, most of it was shells. You had to, which means you had to go get, like Sean said, a crazy credit line to put everything in, and then Mr. Earl and him to put everything in a brownstone. Some of these brownstones are 5 or 6 stories high. You have to put everything in. It's not just one floor. Every floor would need plumbing, electric, gas, heat, lighting.
And before you go get Mr. Earl, you gotta get a
permissions.
Literally, you have to go to a builder, right? Like, you have to get blueprints. That shit has to be approved by the city. Yep. This has to be okayed. You have to be in code. Right. You have to. This is why a lot of places you see right now. So in New Jersey, just really briefly, like when I use the word code. So in New Jersey, what has been found is that they've been splitting homes up. So what was once a 2-family home is now operating as a 4-family home.
Right.
And it is terrible inspection because they're not built like that. The homes are not physically built like that. They are, in some instances, potential death traps. Like, you cannot just put that many people in a home, physically. Nope. It doesn't work that way.
Nope.
And so this idea that you're just going to get this and it's just going to be this quick turnover and you're going to find, when I was helping my people, like, I had to tell her, I was like, you might have to go 4 or 5 months without anybody in this unit because
it's not up to code.
The people that are coming are going to fuck your shit up.
Right.
They're not people you want because you own this. Like, this is a real property, right?
Like,
you have some equity here. You have a stake in this. You don't want that kind of person in your place.
Right.
Okay, your shit up.
So, like, and not to belabor this, so my passion for this topic particularly comes from 2 different experiences that we're going through right now, literally. We have my great-grandmother's house in a small town in South Carolina that we're selling as is because the foundation is not stable. It's a nice little house, but it's probably a teardown. Somebody's probably going to buy it for the lot, right? So, but it's hard to move because the location isn't necessarily prime. There's not a lot of amenities around it. You know, it's off a major highway, but it's not off of a major like commercial area. So like it's been sitting for a while. So that house reminds me of the house that they bought in Detroit. Mm-hmm. We have it. We've had people come look at it, but it's been sitting for over a year, right? Yeah. Then secondly, my grandparents' house in the Bronx, which is right up the street from Yankee Stadium, which in theory will eventually be gentrified, but people have been saying that for a fucking decade, and it ain't there yet. And my mom was like, before we sell it, do you want it? And I was like, no, because I was like, who's going to live in the house while I'm rehabbing the house? Because them niggas will steal my shit.
Yeah, they'll see some new shit, and they'll be gone.
Yeah, like, I'm going to put some, because they've already stole all our plumbing and our pipes.
Of course they did.
And the wires and our everything. So I was like, okay, so I'd start fixing the house up, I put some new copper in it, and then somebody steals it. I was like, unless I'm going to move across the street and keep Sentry, it doesn't make any sense for it. And it needs a new roof. And it needs, I was like, at this point, it doesn't make any sense for me to try to redo it. And it's a row house. It's a gorgeous, it was a gorgeous house in its height.
Yeah.
But it's been so devastated by break-ins and people taking stuff and all that other stuff. And I just also don't want to have to physically be there while I'm redoing the house, and that's the only way I can trust that the shit's gonna get done properly. You know what I mean?
You're gonna basically have to damn near live there or be there like every day.
Together, we think I'm bugging. You got a row house, it's in the Bronx.
Flip it.
What are you talking about? And people in real life have been arguing with me about that. I'm like, you wanna buy the shit? You can buy it. I'm not, I'm like, we selling this. I don't have it in me. I'm gonna rehab our house in Harlem. I'm not doing that. You know what I mean? It's just too much.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a way more, like y'all have said, like we all 3 have said, it's way more work and intricate than people want to realize. You know, it's not easy. It's not a cakewalk. You know, yes, if you do things right, you can maybe make some cash, but it's a lot to get to that space to flip it and make cash. It ain't just like, whatever. So, so that's it. We're going to wrap it up on that note. Happy leap year, I guess. Shit, I don't
know. Are they just parties? I'm surprised I haven't seen that.
I ain't seen about no parties or nothing.
I don't think that's a thing yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's a thing yet. Real quick, I want to mention, I know Nye, I know Brown don't care, but we've been watching the new series Cherish today. It's not really good. Trying to stick with it, but it's not really popping. You know, I'm my own network person, but this might be one of my first own joints I check out of. It's not compelling. We're trying, but it ain't really compelling. Well,
but I do want to advocate, if you guys haven't watched it, this Netflix series, Love is Blind.
Well, you know what? I saw that last night. It looks like it's good.
It's so good. And it's one of the ones that they're releasing in sections. So the, they're releasing the finale, the last couple of episodes, this Thursday.
Okay, so you can't just binge all the way through.
No, you can binge almost. I think there's like two episodes left, or maybe it's just one two-hour episode left for this Thursday. But okay. So basically the concept, it's like taking Married at First Sight, which I got to talk about another episode because this I got to just talk about how bad this season is and the casting for these type of shows. Married at First Sight, and I don't know, we didn't talk about it. I don't know if you guys watched it, this Netflix show they had, The Circle, which is basically...
Yeah, it's the social media drink, right?
It's like you're put in a house, and it's basically like a real-life social media experiment where you can kind of quote-unquote play as any kind of character. Some people played as themselves. Some people were catfish. Some people were whatever.
Okay.
And every couple of days, there's a ranking of most popular people in the circle. Mm. And people get voted out and all this other type of shit. So, but it's like a combination of those two. These people meet each other. They have like speed dating in pods. So they're rooms that face each other where they can talk to each other without mics. They're directly across from each other. And they sit in these rooms and talk to each other, but they don't see each other. And they're not supposed to describe each other.
They're supposed to fall in love with the personality.
They're supposed to fall in love with the person. And then, like, after, like, a week, you propose. Right? And then out of, I think, I don't know how many people were in the house all together, but I think, like, eight couples went on to actually get engaged. And then they go on, like, a little kind of pre-honeymoon. They don't meet each other till after they propose.
Okay.
And they all went on like a little pre-honeymoon, and then they have to like move in together, but ultimately they get married after like a month all in. Okay. And the finale is going to be marriage, but it's really, really compelling.
Yeah, I want to see it. I want to see it.
You should watch it. It's
all right. I'm going to check it out. All right. We're wrapping up on that note. Again, happy leap year to whoever. And we'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got three ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.